This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
On Tisha B'Av, the halacha is that we don't learn Torah. But among the things that we are permitted or we should learn is the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. It's not just the idea of learning the story because we have nothing else to do, so we read the story of the destruction of what happened, like a historical event. But really, we're learning the story in order to learn from the story. It's be'etzem a chelek in Torah. And like every word of Torah, every letter of Torah, every tag on the every ois, everything in Torah, it's infinite. So the story of Bar Kamsa is infinite as well. But it's a lesson to us, it's a roadmap to us, how to get out of the Golos. If the story of Bar Kamsa is what sort of led us into Golos, then by reading the story and analyzing their mistakes and not doing the same thing, we get out of the Golos. That's why not just potentially we have a chance to learn it, it's a chiyuv to understand what they did wrong or what we're doing wrong. As we all know, any generation that the Beis Hamikdash was not built in their time is as if they were destroyed it. So it's as if every generation until now did not repent, did not fix up the original mistake, and therefore they are continuing. We are continuing. Hopefully by tonight we'll end it and we'll eat New Shalayim. But until then we're going to learn the story. The Hakdama to the story, we'll see why it's important, in the Gemara in Gittin, the Hakdama Rabbi Yochanan says, he quotes a pasuk, Asher Adam Mefachet Tamid. Praiseworthy is a person who's always afraid. And that person, we'll see what it means soon. So let's go through a first story, and then we'll go to Kamsa Bar Kamsa. There's a legendary story of the beginning of the Muslim movement. The Muslim movement itself is something to discuss. There are books written about it, when it began, how it began, who was against it, who was for it. It's really a fascinating sugya. But the story of when it became really vibrant, they claim, that Rabbi Saul Salanter heard about the story. There was a person living in a poor town, a poor person in a poor town. I'm making up a thing. They said he was a shoemaker or a cobbler, a shoemaker. And he lived in this town, and he was just like everyone else in these small dorfs, the small places in Europe. He went through his daily events. And one day, a horse comes into town, riding on a white horse. Someone comes out, he's dressed well, and he says, he's looking for Mr. So-and-so. Everyone's like, you look, okay. They point him to the shoemaker. They figure, okay, maybe this guy is on a long ride on the horse. He needs to fix his shoes, maybe. Comes into the shoemaker, he says, what's your name? I need a star who your father is. The shoemaker's like, wow, that's a lot of questions to fix your shoes. They're asking a few questions, and it comes out that he listen, he knew who he was. He says, this is my father, this is my Zayda. He said, you should know that you had an eighth, seventh, sixth, doesn't make a difference. You had a cousin who passed away with no Yarshim that everyone knew about. Multi-millionaire. We're going back to 1850s. Unbelievable Yerusha of wine fields and everything. It's all yours. He said in his tzava, you have to give the tzava and give it to the relative you find. You should know it took us 2 years to track you down because it's mamish five generations. He's like, I never heard of this guy. I don't know this guy. This sounds like in America we'll say a Nigerian scam. Like, what do you want from me? You need my passport. What is that? He says, it's all yours. You have to sign the document. It's all yours. And it was true. Once in a while, it's true. And it worked. This guy went overnight from being a regular shoemaker to the melech malchi of all the city. And he had a daughter in Shaduchim. What happens? Avada, all of a sudden, in the world today, the world 1850s as well, his daughter's considered the catch of the century. She's all of a sudden, all the milos, she's a genius all of a sudden. This shoemaker's a genius now. It's unbelievable. And he makes a shidduch from a very chosh of a mishpacha, a rebbe mishpacha. And all the Rebbe Shemeshpachas are all, you know, they're all somehow related. It became the chasana of the year. And the mamish, the chariots are coming in, the golden chariots are all coming from all around the world. Everyone's coming to see this chasana. And they come to the chasana. It's fabulous. It's, oh, you know, this town hasn't seen a chasana like this probably since it was created. 400 years, they haven't had a chasana like this. It's all because this person somehow, luck of the draw, a lottery ticket, he had the same DNA as this guy who died, eighth generation DNA. And he's sitting at the chasana. And all the friends are sitting by the chasana. And what happens is, you know, once in a while you're sitting in a fancy chasana. As the steak sauce is dripping down someone's mouth, she's saying, a chutzpah, the guy wastes so much money on a chasana. And this, some of the people were not so excited to see that this guy all of a sudden has the biggest shidduch in the world. And one guy was mamish nishta mensch, was eating at him, couldn't handle it. Mamish getting an ulcer right there. And he gets up and he moves into the middle. As all the rebbes, he's clearing the way of all the choshuva people. And he gets into the middle and he takes off his shoe. And he turns to the caliph's father and says, listen, do me a taiva, I'll pay you two kopecks. You got to fix my shoe right now. And the father, the bride, is all bizyonistic. And everyone's, all the rebbe's like, what? Fix his shoe? What's going on here? And the guy faints at the chasana. He faints and he passes away. And this chasana made such a roshim on the belt. This event made such a roshim on the belt that, according to the legend, they decided now is going to start the Muslim movement. The Muslim movement must begin. How could there be such a situation? The Muslim movement must begin. For years, this story is written in Svarim. For years, this is like a popular story. The point, what I want to point out, is to tell you like this. Here's the story I told you, and here's the result of the story. The story was what I just told you, and the result was the Muslim movement began. If you go around and ask 99% of the people, what happens now, it happened, they will tell you, because a guy who's sitting at a chasana, eating the steak sauce, walks into the middle, can't forgive, and he puts the shoe in the guy's face, says, this guy needs Musa. If we have Musa, then the whole world would be a better place. And that's how it was understood for a long time. Then there was a Yerushalmi quiet, one of the Lamba of Tzadikim about 100 years ago, and he was writing about this story, and he says, everyone has it wrong. That is not why they decided to make the Muslim movement. Because this guy who walks into the middle with a shoe, this guy's not, he's almost unredeemable, if you could use such a phrase in today's world. He's not exactly the person that we're going to, we'd have to give this guy Musa 10 years earlier. The Musa was for the father of the bride. The father of the bride, what are you fainting? You should have taken the shoe and kissed it and danced with it. Because Lamaisa, you don't deserve a chas like this officially. You had nothing, you did nothing, and all of a sudden you're the best shidduch in the world. You should be happy and be thankful, like we have on Pesach night, the person who's eating the matzah, and he always remembers what his life was like. You know, all the rich people eating the matzah from the Dubna Magid. So that point was, the point of the creating the Musa was not for the arrogant, aggressive guy. It was for the father of the bride. So the point is, that when you have, my point, now we're going to go through Bar Kamsa, when you have the whole story in front of you, and you know the beginning of the story, the end of the story, the result of the story, sometimes, sadly to say, you miss it. You miss what the real point of the story was. Just like in the story of the Muslim movement. So I'm going to go through slowly, as slow as I can talk, we're going to go through slowly the story of Bar Kamsa, just outside, and then we'll ask a few questions, and we'll see if we all got the story right. So the basic story is, after Rabbi Yochanan's introduction of some Pasuk and Mishlei, the basic story, how the Gemara says it, the Gemara sets it up, that there was a guy, nameless. Number one is already nameless. Quote, we'll call him the host. And this Gemara thought this host had one friend, one enemy. As luck would have it, they had very similar names. Kamsa, his friend, Bar Kamsa's enemy. He had a friend and an enemy. And he tells his, seems like his shamish, or a mailman, he tells me, you got to deliver, of course, I'm making a big party, you got to deliver the invitation. As we all know, the invitation gets mixed up, it goes to Bar Kamsa, who's the enemy. And the enemy shows up to the party, and then they have a sichsuch. Doesn't go well. And the Gemara already on the next page is where he says he lifts him with his hands. He's physically aggressive. This host, physically aggressive. He throws Bar Kamsa out. Bar Kamsa's ois mensch. He says all the rabbis saw what happened. Rabbis, nameless, no names. The nameless rabbis, the nameless host. And they threw him out. They didn't defend me. It's not even sure. The Ben Yoyada says that they didn't even see anything. But let's say he's an angry man, this Bar Kamsa, and he says, I'm going to destroy the world. And he goes, and he's actually successful at almost destroying the world. He destroys the base of Mikdash. He goes to the Roman authorities. It doesn't take, by the way, 5 minutes. It's a whole long process. He's still fired up. He runs to the Roman authorities, and he snitches on the Jews, and he has a whole master. This guy sat in yeshiva. He took a smicha course, and he knows which mumin are not allowed by the Jews, and yes, allowed by the goyim. So he made a mumin, the animal. I'm not sure what the women know here. He made a slight blemish in the animal that the goyim held. That's not a blemish. I've had to bring that animal up to the sacrifice on the altar. That's not a big deal. No, but the Jews hold not. He mamish knew the sugya well. He went to doctor school to make sure his hands stay steady, and he got it all done. And then they come. Now, what do we do now? They chop. The Jews chop. Rabbi Zechai ben Avkilos. Rabbi Zechai ben Avkilos, the Galadar. He chop what's going on here. And he said, we got a problem. And he starts debating. They sit down to debate. What do we do with this guy? Do we kill this guy? Not because I a whole drasha there. And it ends off by saying that the anova will say humility. Some will say it's indecisiveness. Whatever the decision you might use, what word you want to define it as. Because of Avzechai ben Askulas, everything got destroyed. Why? Because he didn't stop. He didn't kill the Moser. He didn't kill Bar Kamsa. He didn't stop the animal. He didn't allow the animal to go up. So Melech destroyed the whole thing. That's the basic story. So the Gemara starts and says, very interestingly, that because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, everything was destroyed. And then it goes through this interesting story, and it ends up by saying, Avzechai ben Askulas, he's the guy. It's a little funny when you start reading it. Who's is it Kamsa by Kamsa? Is it Chai Ben Avkulas? Who's the guy who we're blaming here? The whole world knows Bar Kamsa. He's the worst guy in the world. But wait a second. The Gemara seemed to blame Chai Ben Avkulas also. And by the way, it's a very strange thing. Kamsa, in no part in this story does Kamsa make an appearance. Kamsa's like Derech Agav. Very Derech Agav, by the way. He had a friend called Kamsa. That's it. After that, nobody discusses Kamsa. He's not there at the party, or maybe he is. We're not going into that. Kamsa doesn't seem to be mentioned at all in the Gemara. So why are we saying Kamsa and Bar Kamsa? What does Kamsa have to do with anything? And by the way, in Gemara language in general, the first person listed in any story that goes on is more important. So if you really want to analyze it, who is the destructive force in the base of Mikdash? Kamsa first. Bar Kamsa second. Kamsa first. That's it. Very strange. And if you, some people could tell me, it's not really Kamsa. Of course not. But Kamsa, Bar Kamsa, it's a rhyme. Everyone likes a good rhyme. Okay, so who's the rhyme for Zechai? I know it's a tough one. Who's going to rhyme Zechai ben Afkilos? We should have said, I can't think of it either. Kamsa and Bar Kamsa and Zechai ben Afkilos and whatever rhymes with Zechai ben Afkilos. That's a hard one. Why? How come Zechai ben Afkilos doesn't get a rhyming buddy? And Kamsa is thrown in because he sounds like a good name. He's thrown in with Bar Kamsa. It's not Yashas. And what's even odd, as I'm saying, even Bar Kamsa, barring the Masho and others that say he was the son of Kamsa. Let's say he wasn't. It's irrelevant to this next question. What's his real name? So we know Kamsa's name. We don't know the host. We don't know the rabbis. We don't know the guests. And we know Zechai ben Afkilos. And I'm telling you right now, we don't know Bar Kamsa. Does anyone here, just to use a name, even on a Chashav audience, does anyone know the name of Yimach Shemai Adolf Hitler's father? I have no idea. I'll be honest, I don't know either. You go through the greatest villains in history and try to tell me what the father's name are. I don't know. Why are you blaming the father? Let's say Kamsa was his father. We're not even. Well, what's Bar Kamsa's real name? He's only the son of Kamsa. Doesn't he have a name for himself? Or he's like, oh, we don't want to say his real name. That's not fair. So we have now Kamsa's name, Zechai ben Afkulos' name, how we book in them and we say, by the way, it's Kamsa, Bar Kamsa, Zechai ben Afkulos, and every other character, every other personality, every other person involved with the story is not getting named. And Kamsa, again, is not even part of the whole story. What's going on with Kamsa? So in the names itself, we should start thinking, wait, something's off, something's a little off of the story. So I want to go through five questions. I might have said a couple of them now just to review it. And then we'll start seeing how we might have had this whole story wrong. So the first question, again, is pretty obvious that we just said, is that why is Kamsa mentioned at all? It's not fair. And even if, by the way, even if his name rhymes, it's still not fair. We put a guy, his name, a day shall live in infamy. His name shall live in infamy. Why? Because his name rhymes with Bar Kamsa. That's it. It's a little tough. Second question, we have to figure out who's going to get the more blame here. Is it Kamsa Bar Kamsa or is it Chai ben Afkilos? Normally, when you talk about the destruction, people know Kamsa Bar Kamsa's name. Zechai ben Afkilos is not a popular name. I don't know if a lot of people know it for good or for bad. I don't think people are aware of that name so much. So why is the Gemara starting with these two and then going to the third? Masha has to bomb Kasha. That Kasha, I think, is very famous today. That the Gemara in Yuma says that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because of Sinat Chinam. So what is the story for doing anything? What is the story? There's no sin. I don't know, on first instance, Bar Kamsa is an evil person. I don't know if you can call his reaction sin as chinam. Maybe he's a Balkaisen, maybe he should have calmed down, but it's not chinam. If he believes he was thrown out in public and he was embarrassed in public, it's not, even if he's wrong, it's not called chinam. Chinam, I think you'd interpret chinam as meaning baseless completely. I mean, Jimamish, no shaykhis. He had shaykhis, he was physically removed from a party in public, not such an. And the Gemara says sin as chinam is who? Is it Bar Kamsa? Is the whole Klyasol going to suffer because of Bar Kamsa? Let's say Bar Kamsa is the worst guy in the world. Not a bad thought. I'm saying, let's say he's the worst guy in the world. Okay, so now what? What's it doing to me? It's not fair. The whole, you tell me the Beis Hamikdash never came back because every generation has one Bar Kamsa? That's not a fair thing to the rest of us. Then I said the kash with the names. Okay. So now I want to go to a yesoid that's not so famous. But in today's world, I think it's more understandable. There's a yesoid, it doesn't do with Torah, but of course it's Torah. But there's a concept when someone writes, there's multiple ways of writing an event. You could write the event, like we talk about in America, live version, the live version of events. We're broadcast live as far as I know right now. And then there's the people who are not here right now, and they're going to watch it tomorrow on double speed if they think they can get through with that. Right? So there's a live event, and there's the replay of the event. Live and replay. And that, by the way, when you read the Torah, it refers to both events. In only one place in the Torah does the Chazal talk about the fact that the Torah repeated the live event and the repetition, and that's in Parshas Chayesara by Yeshidach. Parshas Chayesara, I produced a whole sefer on it called Simon Kad, printed from 100 years ago, of all the differences why they're not the same. But when you look at it on the surface, and the Medrash says it, here we have the same story repeated twice. But that means normally we don't repeat a story twice. We either have the story in the original events that it occurs, live events, and sometimes you have the repetitions of it, and we say, by the way, you know what happened over there? Just like in this week's past Parsha. This past week's Parsha, which comes out every year in the 9 days, Parsha's Devarim, every single year, what happens? Part of the story of the spies is learned from this week's Parsha. The original event, the live version of events, even though we're reading it all later, the live version of events happens in Parshalach. And then this week's parasha, Parashat Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating it, so you start mixing and matching, you figure it all out, and you got the whole story together. Aniyim b'makam echad, ashir b'makam acher, and the whole thing fits together. That's a general theme that happens in the Torah. The live events and the past events. It seems that there is an inyan coming to when it, in the Torah. I'm going to start Torah, but stretch it out to Tanakh. When it comes to Tanakh, that the authorities who write it down, starting from the Torah, when it's a live event relevant to the Geula, the redemption of Klal Yisrael, it seems to be we go into the live event. So as an example, this is all in parentheses, but we get back to Bar Kamsa, so just to understand the aside, that there's something called a live event and an unlive event. So Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, again, this is all in parentheses. If you want to, I wouldn't say drink coffee right now, because that would be wrong to say, but if you want to need a little break, it's fine. Just to understand this is in parentheses. Moshe Rabbeinu shows up to Mitzrayim, and as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu came to the border, and Rashi tells us, you know what happened when he came to the border? He came with his wife and kids, right, the whole story with the Mila, and Aaron said, what are you doing? Why are you bringing more people into this place? This is the worst place in the world. You got to send them home. And he sends them home. And Rashi says it in Shemois, when you read the story in Shemois, that Moshe Rabbeinu coming to be the goyal of Am Yisrael, to reveal, to redeem Klal Yisrael, came with his wife and kids. You're not missing. You read the Pesukim. He's coming to his wife. He's in the hotel. Something happened with a meal with a snake. It's an interesting story. And then no one discusses anything. Then Moshe's in Mitzrayim. There's no, if you were reading without knowing anything, you would just assume that Moshe's there with his wife and kids. Why would you assume otherwise? There's no mention of them, a big deal. They were there a second earlier. Rashi says, by the way, where did it happen? Where did the Torah teach this? Where had Rashi get this? Because later on, in Parshas Yisroi, when Yisroi is coming out to the desert to meet Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, I came with your wife and kids who you divorced, whatever divorce means. Which means later on, but while it was going on, the Torah left it out. Why? Interestingly, because while it was going on, no one knew about Moshe's wives. They're all in Egypt. The whole Klal Yisrael in Egypt are being battered and everything like that. Aaron HaKohen turns to them and says, listen, you can't bring more people in here. This is bad news. We can't have more people in. So Moshe says, you know what? I hear the Taina. I'm going to leave them outside. So Moshe Rabbeinu shows up. There's nobody in Klal Yisrael that understands that Moshe was married with kids. There was no internet back then. So he shows up as the Goyal. And okay, nobody's asking any questions. Were you married? That's irrelevant. So no one there knew that he had a wife and kids. So when the Torah was writing it as is, when the Torah was writing the events as they're occurring, it left out the detail. Why? Because in the live event, nobody knew the detail. We all know that Hashem's name does not appear in the Megillas Esther. In open form. Why not? Because when the redemption of the events was going on during Esther and Mordechai, Hashem did not reveal himself as well. So in the live events that were occurring, yes, afterward you get a Megillah and you read the whole scroll, that's a very cool story, but Vashti, you put the whole thing together. But at the time, nobody saw it. So when at the time, nobody's seeing it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when the Nevi'im wrote it over, they followed the pathway of Moshe Ben Zgul and did it as well. So there is an idea that we sometimes use the live events and things that were unaware during the original initial events. If they weren't aware of it, then when the Torah, the Nevi'im, now we're going to add on the Gemara, says over the story, they leave out these events also. Because why? Because we're trying to get into the mindset of what was occurring at the time. So now we're going back outside the parentheses. You have a Yesod now that when you're reading a story of redemption, you're in the moment, as they'll say. You're in the moment of what was occurring at the time. And if they didn't know something at the moment, we're not going to read it at the moment either. So what happens in the story? Bar Kamsa is thrown out. It sounds like a big party. Public, Bar Kamsa thinks it's a major public event. Public event, bounced out, major, becoming the coffee room information. Everyone in the coffee room is discussing Bar Kamsa. You know what they're discussing? Who is the main one responsible for throwing Bar Kamsa out? Is the host a jerk? He couldn't let the guy sit there and pay for the meal? He couldn't. Is he a real Jew? He turned down the full price? The whole meal could have been paid for. You didn't want to do it. That's not. Maybe the mailman, we can make mailman jokes, right? The guy didn't know the difference between Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. He didn't know one guy's a friend, one guy. We have a whole coffee room discussion on the mailman. Absolutely. Then we have the discussion on the anonymous rabbis. Which one saw? Which one could have stopped? It became mamish juicy information. Every Shabbos table in Klal Yisrael was discussing this. And of course, then when the event is showing up to the Beis Hamikdash, they're coming with this weird animal that has a little bit of a blemish that nobody knows if it's a blemish. Maybe it is a blemish. Should we put the blemished animal on the sacrifice on the altar because maybe it's a lab? But according to us, the whole spiel became a major event. The Sanhedrin is sitting down to discuss this. Can you imagine the information going on? Then you got a whole bunch of people jumping in. All the people in the world now jumping in and saying, you know what? Forget about the host. Forget about the mailman. Forget about the rabbis. You know who the bad guy is? Got to be Bar Kamsa. He's the guy who went to yeshiva just to learn to put a mum in the thing. That guy's the worst guy in the world. And now all the tumult switched into the Bar Kamsa. Everyone was discussing Bar Kamsa. He's the bad guy. So what happens is now, in the events that were occurring at the time, in the end, near the end of the Beis Hamikdash's time, what happened was everyone was sitting around discussing it. They got an amazing thing they got. They got a prophet, a Gemara, saying like this. What did they do wrong in the second Beis Hamikdash? The Gemara in Yuma tells us. You know what they did wrong in the second Beis Hamikdash? It adds on. They observed mitzvahs. Read the Gemara in Yuma, Taf Tesman Alf. They observed mitzvahs. They learned Torah. What did they do wrong? Oh, sinas chinam. So imagine you're sitting right now. You're a year out from the Beis Hamikdash being destroyed. You're sitting in your house, and you get a prophet telling you, you're a good Jew. You learn Daf Yomi in the morning. You have lamdas. You're doing mitzvahs, chesed, right? You're doing everything. But you know what's bad with this generation? Sinas chinam. That's going to destroy this Beis Hamikdash, guys. And you're sitting in your house with your family. You're eating supper. You're like, guys, got to be honest. We're good. We got nothing to do with this. Because there's nobody in the world who ever admits that they hate someone for nothing. You hate someone, you have a lot of good reasons. There's no such thing as sinas chinam in the world. It never existed. There's no way, even when you meet the guy at first, and he says, I don't like that guy right away. It's not that you don't like the guy right away. It's there's something off with that guy, I don't like him right away. And that's only 1% of the time. Most of the time, you don't like someone, you have a good list of reasons that make sense to you. So you're sitting in your house, and you're saying to yourself, I'm great. Beis Hamikdash, it's going to stay alive, I'm around. You know why I said stay around? Because the prophet told me, I'm a guy who does mitzvahs, I'm a guy who does Torah. The sinas chinam guys, those guys. Oh, it's my mother-in-law, right? That's who it is. No one thinks themselves, and then they're turning around and they're saying, you know what it really is? Bar Kamsa. That guy, I remember that guy from yeshiva. He was always a little strange. He went and learned in yeshiva and put the blemish in the animal. He should have been thrown out of that party. They should have killed him at the time when they had a chance. So everyone's cursing up Bar Kamsa. The events that are going on at the time that this is occurring in live time was the entire nation of Klai Yisrael all saying, yeah, it's that guy. Hey, me, I don't have anybody in the world. I'm going to say this myself. There's nobody in the world I hate for no reason. I have a lot of people I don't like, I got to be honest. But I have a good reason. For me, the Beis Hamikdash should be around right now. I don't have sinas chinam in me. So every guy in Klai Yisrael was sitting around saying, I have no sinas chinam. I'm good to go. It's that guy. That became a big problem. Why? Because in general, HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes to be Marach Af. Marach Af, where the Goyim get the jokes from, that we are Jews have big noses, because that's the phrase of Marach Af. That's not mine, that's a word from 200 years ago from Rebbes. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Marach Af. That means HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to handle anything. He gives, the term Devarah talks about, he gives the koyach to the arm, to the person who's using that arm to slap the face of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gives the koyach of eyes to the people looking at things they shouldn't look at. While anyone is doing an aver, they only exist because HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows them to exist. Can you imagine the savlonis, the anova that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has? We all exist 100%. We stop in 1 second, it's all over. He gives us the power, the koyach, everything. And while we're eating the chaza sandwich, he gives us the teeth to taste it, the tongue to taste it. Because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. He's marachav. But you know when he stops being marachav? He stops being marachav when he knows there's no hope for tshuva. As long as you're doing something wrong, you're eating the chaza, you're doing whatever you're doing wrong, okay, you can always turn around and do tshuva. It's not a big deal. There's always a chance for tshuva. The only time there's no chance for tshuva is when you stand there and say, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm good to go. That guy, there's no marach af. Because what's the point? The marach af is a point that you're going to do tshuva when it comes to Elzman. The marach af is the idea that at a certain point in time, you're going to realize I'm doing something wrong and repent for it. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, why should I punish you now? Why should I punish you now? I'll give you a chance. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's godless. I wrote to tshuva. He wants the repentance. He wants the tshuva. She says, I'll give you time. Perfect. But the moment the guy says, why, I would never do tshuva. Why should I do tshuva? I don't do anything wrong. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I got it now. There's no point in waiting right now. Because the Yetzer Hara could be sitting there on a beach right now. He's fine. The Yetzer Hara only has to try to drive us crazy when we're still in the game. When we're still in the game, okay, you're a good Jew, come late for Shachas. Whatever that he does to each person separately. But if the person's already an Eisvarf, or the person will never change, so what's the point? That game's over. I'm on to the next character. So B'shas, this is going on in the time of the history of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. What was going on in live events was that everybody was sitting around blaming not themselves. Everyone was blaming the people with sinas chinam. Everyone was saying, Ich bin a gute Jew. Ich bin a gute Jew. Golsi Yehuda, me'oini, umiroi v'avoida. The Jews were exiled, me'oini, easy from poverty, umiroi v'avoida. Arizal's Talmud says, Roiv Avoida meant they davened a lot. They had a lot of Hasidish Menhagim. Roiv Avoida. What we're saying is, the problem was they thought they had Roiv Avoida and they had no Avoinus. When you think you did nothing wrong, there's no. We got a big problem here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't rely on this anymore. He has to say it's time for Gullus. The Beis HaMikdash must be destroyed, because you know why? No one here is going to repent. It's at the time this is going on, no one was repenting. Everyone was going through the sugya. They sat around in the coffee room. They were enjoying themselves, eating the steak, and saying, I'm good, it's that guy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, we got to stop this. We got to stop this right away. And it's funny, because at the same time they understood this Gemara, that it's all somebody else doing sinas chinam, who are they blaming it on? Bar Kamtza. Bar Kamtza didn't have sinas chinam, but they weren't thinking that way. No one wants to look inwardly. They're looking outwardly. Yeah, it's all Bar Kamtza, but Bar Kamtza had no sinas chinam either. They should have said, oh, Bar Kamtza didn't do anything either. He's not sinas chinam, so something's off with this whole picture. So the Chazal decided, grand rabbis decided, they're going to tell the Yidden every year to read this story. Read the story of Kamtza Bar Kamtza. And they're going to put little things, or they're going to take out little things within the story to make everyone figure out what's going on here. So let's start over the list of characters. The worst character in the story, I think, is going to be Bar Kamtza. As a plug, I have a website, rabbihubnet.com. It's YouTube, it's Spotify. If you're under a certain age, I'm not exactly sure how this all works. I gave a share last week showing how Bar Kamtza is innocent. I can make Bar Kamtza innocent. Okay. So Bar Kamtza goes from negative to positive, positive. Who are the other people in the story that were mentioned? We started out, we said the first one was the host. In the book I wrote, I have a whole drush where the host is 100% right. Did nothing wrong. He should have thrown Bar Kamtza out. So the host, maybe good. First reaction, he's bad. But maybe you could come up with a pilpul that makes him good. The mailman, I'm not even sure if everyone thinks he's so bad. He made a mistake. I mean, are we going to kill a mailman? We might. We might kill a mailman. Or we could say that, you know what? He had a boss that's a meshugana, and when he makes a mistake, he goes crazy. So when the boss said the words, maybe, I'm making this up. When the boss said the words, by the way, send it, and he coughed Bar Kamtza, and he heard the word Bar Kamtza, he's like, okay, I'm doing exactly what this guy tells me. Malcolm Gladwell, don't want to quote a guy here, has a whole thing on why that works. Certain people just follow orders. So the mailman followed orders. If he followed orders, it's not the worst thing in the world. So the mailman, maybe he's good, maybe he's not good. The rabbis at the event, I don't know, maybe good, maybe not good. Did they actually see the guy get thrown out? Ben Yoda says they didn't see him get thrown out. And let's say they did see him get thrown out. Okay, maybe there's good reason. Go through the Svarim. The Svarim claim that Bar Kamtza was a bad person, and they were afraid. They were in a secret meeting, maybe, and they couldn't have him there. They were afraid he's a snitch to the government. That's some of the approaches. So the rabbis, okay, maybe they're good, maybe they're no good. Zechariah ben Avkulis, the last one mentioned. Zechariah ben Avkulis, is he good, is he bad? Okay, he's a little... I'm only saying because of the phrase that's speaking of. I don't mean any disrespect. But Zechariah ben Avkulis, okay, so he's a little timid. I'm making a decision. Okay. You're going to kill a guy, make a little demon? It's not the worst thing in the world. He's too much of an anav. The Gemara says he's too much of an anav. Okay, that's not... So listen, halavai, that's Archasarna. Archasarna is too much of an anav. So you start going through the story, you start thinking, okay, every guy here is good, every guy is bad. You start, wait a second, I don't even know who's good or bad anymore. I am now completely mixed up. I don't know what's going on. But the one guy you could be pretty sure didn't do anything here is Kamtza. Kamtza. He's zero. Kamtza might have been completely oblivious. Again, you could look around Sfarim, they might say otherwise, but Kamtza most probably, in this event we're saying tonight, was completely oblivious of the entire event. He never got the invitation. You're assuming he was home, by the way. It could be he wasn't even home. Didn't think about the invitation. He was away for the week. He didn't come to the party because he didn't get the invitation. He went away for the week. He's irrelevant. He's mamish nobody. He's zero. He has nothing to do with the story. Zero to do with the story. But yet, the rabbi said, when you start the story, say Kamtza first. Why? Because you know why? The same way, Kamtza has no shaychus to the story. The one guy in this whole story who's 100% innocent, we're going to say that the Bar Kamtza guy sounds like him. What? Kamtza? Give the guy a break. He's mamish irrelevant. You know why we're doing it that way? To tell you, because you think you're irrelevant. You're not really relevant either. Because every person in Klal Yisrael who sat around blaming Yenim, Bar Kamtza, the rabbis. Everyone blames the rabbis. Blame the rabbis, blame Bar Kamtza, blame the host, blame the mailman, blame Reb Chaim ben Avkulis, blame everybody. Sit around and talk about sinas chinim. Yena has sinas chinim. I don't have sinas chinim. The rabbis set the system up to know one thing right away. The first thing you got to think about is Kamtza. You know why? Because when you start thinking about Kamtza, I'm like, whoa, I can't blame Kamtza. Oh, you can't blame Kamtza? Then start realizing who you're shifting the blame on is wrong. We started with a story of Musar. We told you that you could know the entire story and the result of the story and still get it completely wrong. Possibly to say that everyone knows the story of Kamsa bar Kamsa, knows the result of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and has the whole story wrong. Because they're busy blaming Yenim. Because when you're reading the story every year on Tisha B'Av, every single year, you ask every single kid, who's the bad guy in the story? Bar Kamsa. No, not Bar Kamsa. Kamsa. Then ask a little kid, why is Kamsa bad? So the Rebbe will come up with some cute answers. The answer is Kamsa's not bad. So why are we talking about him? Because we're trying to show you who you think is good and bad is wrong. Because you're also wrong, because you think you're not bad. And until you start repenting for being a chelik in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, how do I know? Am I being so offensive that I'm saying everyone in this room, not this room, the other room, is all going to be part of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? Yeah, now I know, because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. If we weren't doing the same thing over and over, it wouldn't be a problem. People say, I don't make a mistake two or three times. It's called a tradition. Tradition. That's not a mistake two or three times. It's a tradition. When you hit a certain number, it's a tradition. We want to break tonight's tradition. The tradition of Klai Yisrael sitting around and reading the story of Kamsa by Kamsa and sitting and blaming by Kamsa and all the papulim against everybody else and say, no, what? It's nobody else. It's me. I am the problem. I'm the problem. And I could change it. So what I want to say is, first part of this, is that the idea to get to the point of recognizing that the reason why the Chachamim set up the beginning of the story of Kamsa and then Bar Kamsa is that every person should know it ain't Kamsa, and the same way you know it's not Kamsa, you know it's also going to be you. It's the same idea. Same idea. So that's the Yisodin. Now, you're going to tell me, that sounds wild. Are we doing this today? Could this be going on today? Okay, so let's analyze what goes on today. The Goyim in the world have proven that they can see the reality of an event. They can see the reality of an event of an October 7th attack, and they could blame Israel. I don't know. Most of the world, I say more than 50%, including the Muslims, including the college morons. You go around the world right now, and everyone has, we have the same view that they have. The entire story is in front of them, and they're all got the story wrong. Like the Muslim movement, like Kamsa by Kamsa, people are looking at a story and getting everything wrong. It's still going on today. This isn't news. But what do we do as Yidden? What do we do as Yidden? Walk into any coffee room today and say, what's the pshat? What's the pshat that this college kid, whatever question you're going to waste your time on? The answer is always going to be the same. What is it? Anti-Semitism. Right? Anti-Semitism. What is anti-Semitism in Hebrew, by the way? The word for anti-Semitism in Hebrew, I think one of the definitions, if I'm allowed to say it, it's called sinas chinam. Sinas chinam, that's anti-Semitism, right? They hate us for no reason. They don't ask a guy, what do you hate the Jews for? The guy has no idea. It's in his genes. It's in his, as my friend says, who survived the Vilna Ghetto, it's in the milk of the parents. They give it over to the kids. They have no idea why they hate the Jews. That's called sinas chinam. So what are we doing now as Jews? We're sitting around and we're saying, you know why the problem with the world today is? You know what the problem with Iran is? Yimach Shemam, what's the problem? And sinas chinam. I think I've seen that story before. Is that the Gemara in Yom Daf Tes? When the Gemara says that why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Because everyone held that they were learning, they were choshev, they were doing mitzvahs, and it was sinas chinam. And we explained the Gemara before to mean that everyone held, I'm doing mitzvahs, I'm doing Torah. You know what does sinas chinam? Yanim, because I have no sinas chinam in me ever. I hate everyone for a good reason. That means today, sitting around, blaming anti-Semitism for everything that's going on in the world, oh, it's anti-Semitism. Okay, so why is that? You're doing the same thing. We have a new tradition in Klai Yisrael. Blame sinas chinam, which is never me. That's not idea. I was in the car years ago, Reb Zelig Epstein Zatzal. Had a few good experiences, Baruch Hashem. And one time I was driving to Lakewood with him. It was a long drive, so we got to do a lot of conversations. And at Marash Shiva, a Rebbe. But when I knew, if he was in the front and I was in the back and he turned around, I said something I shouldn't have said. That was my rule to myself. If he was turning around, I was about to know how stupid whatever I just said was really not the right thing to say. I was in a car with him on the way to Lakewood. A different discussion. Not for this crowd. Not for now. But the Yisoid he told me is, we're talking about the Goyim, this is 20 years ago, anti-Semitism then, and all of that. And he turned to me and he said, Yiddish, she sounds better, by the way. His voice sounds better. He said, you don't understand. Don't look at the Goyim and then decide what the Jews have to do. No, look at the goyim and what the Jews are already doing. Look at the Jews, and it will be reflected on what the goyim are doing. Zionist protocols, as I like to say. We believe in the Zionist protocols. The Jews run the world. Not the way these anti-Semites think we run the world. I don't know about banking. I don't know about the industries, the Democrats, the Republicans, the communists, the I don't know all that stuff. But the Jews run the world. Yeah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at the Jews and says, what am I going to do? As the Chavetz Chaim said, if there's an earthquake in Japan, it's because something happened in Radin. If there's someone Machal Shabbos in Paris, it's something going on in Radin. We control the world. We control the world. So when we're looking around the world and we say, what are the goyim doing? It's not to say what they are doing to analyze the goyim. What are they doing? What does it reflect that we're doing? I hope I got it right what he told me. If not, I apologize. Michiel's quite there. This is what I think he was saying to me. We look at the goyim, what they're doing, and we know what we're doing wrong. It's perfect. If we're running around right now saying that the goyim are anti-Semites, then we're doing the same mistake we did for the last 2,000 years. We're sitting around reading the Gemara in Yuma saying, Reiv Avoida, I'm Hasidish, Reiv Avoida, I'm doing mitzvahs, I'm doing Torah, the sin is chidim of the world, that's the problem. No, the sin is chidim of the world is not Yenim's problem. The sin is chidim is our own problem. Our problem. People are going to say, depends what you believe in, staying out of politics, no one agrees with anybody. Whatever Iran Gottfried's going to do, it's going to be Trump's fault, Biden's fault. I shouldn't mention the names of these people. It's always someone else's fault. Netanyahu, he's a Jew, allowed to say his name. It's Netanyahu's fault. It's this guy. Everyone has 14 reasons whose fault it is. You know whose fault you're not saying it is? You. What are you doing yourself to change this? You. I'll tell you, unbelievable. Another Abzelig Vart. This is the case that I left out before. We'll get back to it now. Zechariah ben Avkilas had in a situation. He was the Rosh HaBezdin. There's an animal like the caravan of migrants coming to the border. There's an animal with a weird blemish coming toward the altar. What do we do? If we don't put the animal on the altar, it's halachically not allowed. You cannot put the blemished animal on the altar. You can't do that. That's a law of the Torah. But the king sent this animal. The Romans sent this animal. And the Romans are watching because they don't believe in this blemish. Are the Jews rebellious people? What are the Jews doing? And they came to Zechariah ben Avkilas and said, listen, let's go through the options here. Option one, put it up. Put it up. Okay, you violate a law. You know what you're doing when you violate a law? You save 6 million Jews. Okay, a lot of people take that deal. A lot of Rabbanim will take that deal, 100%. Or you kill the guy, and the whole thing stops. And Zechariah ben Avkilas had, you read the Gemara, answers on why these options were not ideal. They weren't ideal. He didn't want to put the animal up. He said, if you put the animal up, people are not going to realize we did it for because the fascists. No, they're not going to realize that. They're going to think we put the animal up. Why? Because I'm changing the law and blemished animals are allowed today. Whatever cheshbon was going on. Why don't we kill the guy? Because if we kill the guy, people are going to say, oh, you put the blemish in the animal, we kill you. Can't have people think of it. That's not true. You're not allowed to blemish the animal, but if you do, we don't kill you for that. So a lot of cheshbon is going on. And the Gemara ends off saying his anova, his humility, is the end of the story. We started kamsa bar kamsa. We're ending the story with humility. His humility was the cause of the destruction. I don't know, is that humility? Some say it means indecisiveness, but we're going to say the simple word, anova, means humility. What's the humility of saying, I'm afraid that if we kill the guy, they're going to say you kill the guy for, okay, it's no humility at all. It's a thing to say. Does it make him humble? I don't know if it makes him humble. So Abzel Zatzal used to say like this. There was a gzeira on Klai Yisrael. Klai Yisrael knew, Gedolim for sure knew, that there was a gzeira going on, that they're in big trouble right now. That they didn't repent for years, they were headed morally in the wrong direction. Morally in the wrong direction. And they knew that. So the question now is what they're going to do about it. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkilas held this yesod. The yesod that people say. The yesod is, if the previous generation couldn't stop this, I can't stop this. If Mashiach didn't come to the Chavetz Chaim and the Vilna Gaon and the Divrei Chaim, and Beis Yosef, I'm going to bring Mashiach. He was saying it reverse. If the Gedolim before me, Zechariah ben Avkilas saying this, if the Gedolim before me couldn't stop this train wreck of the Jews headed toward a disaster, headed toward the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, who am I to stop it? That's false anava. The anava meant humility. He didn't realize, what do you mean? Of course you could stop it. Because every Jew could stop. What are you talking about? It's in your hands right now. You're given this test. You're in charge right now. You know why you're in charge? Because you can stop this train wreck. Yes, you're less than the generation before. Who cares? Doesn't go by who we, it goes by who you are right now. So the Gemara is starting with Kamsa by Kamsa. They destroyed it. To tell you, wake up. It ain't Kamsa. It's you. Not Kamsa. You. But then your accent's going to be, me. I'm not a Russia. Okay? So maybe Sinuskina, but how good? What could I do? What could I do? So we go to the end of the story. It gives you the answer. Don't be like Zechariah ben Avkulis. Don't say, what could I do? No, that's the problem. You're blaming the wrong people and you don't have the belief in yourself. Blame the wrong people, you don't believe in yourself. That's why the Gemara sets it up. That's why they're the only names mentioned. There's no host. There's no rabbis. No Bar Kamsa. That's a nickname. Who are the names? Kamsa, Zechariah ben Avkulis. Because that's the key to get out of the Gullus. Kamsa means recognize who's making the mistakes, who's not making the mistakes. Zechariah ben Avkulis says, wake up, you have the power. Every one of us have the power. What does it take? I've no idea. You all know yourselves. Maybe it means daven shachar with a minyan tomorrow morning. I've no idea. Maybe it means put on a skirt. I've no idea. Whatever you're doing in life, you don't underestimate yourself. You know what happens when you underestimate yourself? The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Not the past tense destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The active destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Because as we know, if the Beis HaMikdash is not built in our time, we destroyed it. So that means what? We are no different than Zechariah ben Avkulis. Zechariah ben Avkulis said, oh, am I that good? I'm not that good. Yeah, you are that good. Or, who cares if you're that good? You're in this situation right now where you belong to help the world. Every one of us right now, in our situation, 2024, Tavshin Beidalt, is in the situation to create the environment to build the Mashiach. Are we that good? Doesn't make a difference to be that good. But you could be. I don't know what it takes. But saying you're not that good? No. That's the problem with the story. That's when you read the story and you make a mistake between Bar Kamsa and Kamsa and Zechariah ben Avkulis. Next shlav? I go on with the next shlav? I tell you there's a few shlav. Keep on going. We said before that I tricked everyone a little bit. The story did not begin with the story of Kamsa by Kamsa. It's not where it started. The story began with Rabbi Yochanan's words of quoting a pasuk of Mishlei, which I started tonight because I was telling a story. Ashrei Adam Mefach HaTamid Makshaliba Yipa Baro. And Rashi says, I have to find the Rashi now, I had it here somewhere. Rashi on those words says, it means that a person says, oh, person is doyeg lirois hanoilet. He's concerned to see what will happen. That shaloi tira takolo, a bad thing should not come out of him. Emesazois, if I'm going to do this thing. That means, Rashi's telling us the reason, Machlech Rashi tells us, the reason why Ashrei Adam is said as the hakdama to the whole story is Rabbi Yochanan told you beforehand. Don't read the story like a three-year-old. Don't read the story and have a picture of Bar Kamsa with horns and a... No. Know what names you're mentioning. Kamsa and Zechariah ben Avkulis. Because you have to be doyeg lirois hanoilet. Because the takala, the calamity, the disaster, the destruction that comes out of it, im esezois, if I do something. You know what Rashi's saying? Everyone should say to themselves, what I bring to the table. I myself could reverse the 2,000 years. Stop the tradition. Stop the tradition of reading into the story the other ways we read into the story. And understand that the hints are here. The Gemara's all put it together for us in order to do this. It says like this. We all know, the Pasuk says, that Tisha B'Av is a moyed, a yomtif. Tomorrow morning by Shachris, we don't put on tefillin. Why? Because on tefillin, you don't wear tefillin on yomtif. There's a yomtif aspect to it. What does the second part of that pasuk say? Karalai moyed, balkariya, lishbar bachuri. So in English, the simple interpretation, in Eicha means, karalai moyed, I called it an event, to play on words of moyed meaning a yomtif, but that's reading the plain pasuk. Karalai moyed means I have an event, a meeting place, lishbar bachuri, to destroy the young men of Klai Yisrael. That's an Eicha because it's negative. As this book is about, every word in Eicha is positive. Every word. It's going to be read when Mashiach comes in the song that we sing Megillas Esther, according to Rabbi Yitzchak Baditshuva. Every pasuk in Eicha can be read the Toif. Every point of your life can be good. What does lispar bachuri mean? So the simple interpretation means to break, to destroy. Bachuri means the bacharim. Those are the people who represent that aspect of Klal Yisrael. But there's another way to read the word. Lispar means to break through. Bachuri means bechor nustaken, in the little crevices in a person's heart. Bechor, bachuri, is bachuri means a bachar, with beis being part of the internal real word. But it could be bechori, when beis is a prefix. Not going too fast. But beis is a prefix, and bechori means look into the crevices, the cracks, the holes of internal. Look inside. What the pasuk is telling us, you know when it becomes a yom tif? When people look inside. That's what the pasuk is telling us. Tisha B'Av now is a bad day. You know why? Because that guy has sinas chinam. Whether he's a Jew, whether he's Iran, other people, yeah, those guys, they're sinas chinam guys. But me, I'm not doing anything. Then you know what it is? It's the wrong type of mayid. It's not a good mayid. It becomes a good mayid when you lish b'bachur, you search inside of yourself, you search inside, you say, what's going to be over here? Who's the first person to stand up? Not the first. Who's one of the major players in history, in Jewish history, to stand up and say, you know what? It's me. A couple people. One of the big ones, David HaMelech. David HaMelech was born, can't go through the whole entire story, he was excommunicated by his family. They didn't think that they were fully members of his family, to go into the whole story. They had no idea, he was on the outside. I think it was 28 years, the Medrash says. 28 years, his siblings would have killed him, except the father said, why do you got to kill him? For make him work the fields. Almost, like 75 years ago, what they said. Don't kill him right away. Work him to death. Work him. But David never looked at it. I'm the victim. Yen is the problem. That's not the way he went through life. David went through, I could change the world. It's me. How do you know? Because the Gemara in Yuma says that when we read history as we're learning tonight, and we know the events, and we know what happens afterward, we all read it wrong. We don't read the events correctly. The Gemara tells us a few times, by the way, I'll tell you where you read it wrong. We look at Shaul HaMelech, HaMelech, the first king. He lost his kingship. Oh, he's much worse than David. David kept his kingship. The Gemara says, no, don't talk like that. Shaul wasn't as bad as David. Shaul was better than David. The Gemara says, right away, so Shaul was better than David. So why did Shaul lose the kingship for a mistake and David didn't lose the kingship? And Rechai Shalevet says, one of the classics, so I'll tell you why. Because when Shaul was confronted by Shmuel HaNavi, you did something wrong, his answer, whatever his answer was, not for now. He gave a long answer, with tremendous merits to it, by the way. An incredible answer. But when he came to David HaMelech, not Shmuel, but when David was confronted with his sin by somebody else, his first words out of his mouth were, Chatasi. Which means that the Malchus, in order to be a king, you need certain attributes. You need certain attributes, or else you can't be a king. One of the attributes to be a king is Chatasi. If you could admit a mistake, that's what we want. We don't want politicians who never said anything wrong. Not in Judaism. We want politicians who say, I made a mistake. Who's going to come? We know from before, in order for the Mashiach to reveal himself to Klal Yisrael, we have to have a look like Jews. That means, let's say Mashiach decides tomorrow he's coming. Mirtz Hashem B'Karov. He walks away, says, he knocks on the first door, and he says, okay, listen, buddy, looking for the Jews. Where are they going? So there's some fascinating story about some guy who became religious recently, got off a plane, and he got into a cab, and they said, where are the Jews? He went to Williamsburg. Okay, great. That means what David HaMelech Mashiach, same person, when David HaMelech Mashiach has to come reveal himself to the Yidden, it has to be to people he recognizes. So is it a black hat, a green, blue and white yarmulke, a strimal, a spadik? I have no idea. I don't know what that is. He has to show up and say, oh, I recognize you, you're a Yid. And I know what I need, that's a Yid. So what is a Yid that David HaMelech is looking for? What does the word Yid mean? That's a Yid, right? You got to look up a dictionary. Open the dictionary and say, what does the word Yid mean? Targum Edison tells us. Targum Edison tells us a Yid, which in Hebrew is Yehudi, comes from Yehuda. Why? There were 12 Shvatim. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Why do we call them Yehuda for? Jews, Yidden, Yehuda. Why Yehuda? Targum Edison says, because you know what Yehuda did? He admitted he made a mistake. When you admit you make a mistake, that's an identifying characteristic of a Jew. So when David HaMelech, who says the identifying characteristic of David HaMelech, of Mashiach Malkeinu, comes back and he's looking for a Jew, I know I got to see something in them that I recognize. What does that guy have that he's a Jew that I know I have and I'm a Jew? Hoida on Averis. Admitting you do something wrong. And taking responsibility and saying, I'll change things. Don't blame Yenim. I'm going to do this. The story of Zechariah ben Avkulas, the story of Mashiach coming on Tisha B'Av. Why is Mashiach born on Tisha B'Av? The Gemara says he's born on Tisha B'Av. Why? 1 out of 354? No. Because when Tisha B'Av is done correctly, and it's called a Moyed, like it says in Eicha, why is it called a Moyed, a Yom Tov? Because Lishba Bachuri, we investigate ourselves. And we look at the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and it started from Kamsa, who we know had nothing to do with it, and it ended with Zechariah ben Avkulas, didn't have enough confidence to get up and say, Ich bin it, it's me. Then we have the situation we have. But the moment we look at Lishba Bachuri, not to destroy them, to look inside, the Mashiach says, Ich bin du. I'm here, I recognize those guys. I'm here to reveal them. I'm here to redeem them. Don't blame Sinas Chinam Anyena. Hopefully, tonight, we take it upon ourselves. Confidence. I can change the world. Nobody else's problem. I'm Kamsa. The guy who's getting blamed for doing nothing. You know why? Because everyone can do something. And hopefully we all do it. And tomorrow morning, we wake up to Mashiach saying, I know those guys. Those are my Jews. Thank you.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.